All right. We're concluding our series, our Heart Check series entitled Messengers, and the song we just sang, I've Witnessed It. That's what being a messenger is all about, is telling them what we've witnessed, right? And powerful message there. But yeah, we've been looking the last few weeks at people in the Old Testament who God called to be his messengers to the world, carrying his message of love, carrying his message of good news for all people. In the last couple of weeks, we looked at Jonah and we looked at Esther, who God called to be his messengers at each of their respective times. And in the same way, God has called us today to be his messengers, to be his messengers of the good news of Jesus to a world who needs it. And so this series of messengers is done to encourage you, to encourage each of us to answer that call that God has placed on us, to be his messengers every day and everywhere we go. So to continue that series this morning, we're going to take a look at the life of Moses. So I'd encourage you to turn in your Bibles to Exodus chapter 3. Exodus chapter 3. Exodus chapter 3 is the account of Moses and the burning bush, a familiar account to many of us, right? You've heard that story. This isn't like, what burning bush are you talking about? Some of you, maybe it's new, but most of us have heard that story. And this is actual recently discovered footage of this. This was discovered on an iPhone 12 BC, which of course preceded the 11 BC, the iPhone 11 BC. Little Bible timeline humor for you. And it wasn't long after this that the first tablet came out on that same mountain. I'm sorry. I couldn't help myself. All right, but before we get into this account, into chapter 3, I want to recap the first 80 years of Moses' life, which, by the way, does he not look good for 80? Whew! All right, I want to recap for you the first 80 years of Moses' life. So let's back up even a little more. Israel has gone to Egypt. So the nation of Israel, they reside in Egypt. And why are they there? They're there because Joseph went down, the story of Joseph, right? He goes down, he helps save Egypt and others from famine, and his family came down. And so now Israel, ever since then, has resided in Egypt. And they've, because they're in Egypt, they eventually became slaves of Egypt because a Pharaoh arose who didn't know Joseph. So he enslaved the Israelites. All right, so now they've been slaves for 400 years. At this point. And during this time of slavery, despite the oppression of the Egyptians, despite the hard labor that they were going through, despite their living situation as a nation of slaves, they've continued to grow in number and in strength. They just keep going. They keep growing, right? So Pharaoh sees this, and for the Egyptians, Pharaoh's the king of Egypt, he sees this and he says, all right, we got to do something because these people eventually will be able to overpower us. So he puts out this edict and he says, any Hebrew, that's an Israelite, any Hebrew male that's born is to be killed. So he tells the midwives, when you go and deliver a Hebrew baby, if it's a female, let her live. If it's a male, put him to death. All right? So this is what Moses is born into. So Moses is born into slavery. And worse yet, he's born with a death sentence. Yet he was spared. His mother hid him for the first few months. So his mom hides him. She keeps him quiet, a secret, until she can't anymore. He's a few months old. So what does she do? She puts him in a basket and puts him in the river. And the Bible says in Hebrews chapter 11 that Moses' parents did that by faith. By faith, she put him in the river, knowing that God would take care of him. So Moses in this basket, baby Moses, a few months old, in the basket floating down the river. What happens? Pharaoh's daughter happens to be bathing in the river and finds Moses. And she takes him, this Hebrew boy who's not supposed to be alive, and what does she do? She doesn't put him to death. She adopts him. And she names him Moses because Moses means I drew him out of the water. So here we have Moses, a Hebrew boy born into slavery and then adopted into not just an Egyptian family, but the Pharaoh's family who had sentenced this boy to death. Pharaoh's daughter's son, his grandson. So this is Moses' identity crisis, if you will, right? So Moses has this, he knows he's a Hebrew, and yet here he is, a Hebrew in prince of Egypt. Who am I really, right? He's got these two identities that he might wrestle with. And then we see in the previous chapter, chapter 2, we see that these two identities come crashing together all of the sudden in his life. It says, one day Moses goes out to see his people and how and their hard labor. So when it says his people, it's talking about the Israelites, not the Egyptians. So Moses still identifies the Hebrew people as his people, even though he's a prince of Egypt. So he's got this identity crisis. And he goes and he sees them working and he sees this Egyptian master beating the Hebrew slave. And what does he do? He kills the Egyptian. And he buries his body in the sand. So now he's got another identity. He's a murderer. Now Moses thinks nobody knows about this. I don't know if maybe the only person to witness it was the Hebrew slave, and he thinks he'll keep it a secret. We don't know why, but it does say Moses thinks nobody knows. But the next day, two Hebrews are arguing, and one of the Hebrew men says to Moses, what, are you going to kill me like you killed the Egyptian? The word's gotten out. And word spread, and Pharaoh finds out what Moses did. So what does Pharaoh do? He tries to kill Moses. So now Moses is running for his life. Moses doesn't really belong anywhere. He has no place of belonging. He's not a Hebrew. They're scared of him. What are you going to do, kill us? Who are you to rule over us, right? Pharaoh's trying to kill him again, and Moses has no place to call home. He's a murderer, not really a Hebrew, not really an Egyptian. We don't know. He doesn't know who he is. So what does he do? He flees for his life to Midian. Now he's a refugee. He eventually gets married in Midian and becomes a shepherd for his father-in-law. So now he's a refugee, and now he's a shepherd and a husband and a father. All these roller coasters of identities. And for the next 40 years, things seem to settle down, and Moses seems to have buried his past in the sands of the desert of Midian. This is where we pick up in chapter 3. Moses, at this point, is about 80 years old. He could have applied to be a creaky creaker. And Moses is going about his day as a shepherd at an ordinary job, but as we'll see, God, here in chapter 3, God is about to break apart what Moses thinks of himself and of God. Let's pick up in chapter 3, verse 1. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. Let's stop here for a second. Why do you think Moses was afraid to look at God? Do you think he was afraid to see God? Or do you think maybe he was afraid for God to see him? Do you think Moses was afraid for God to see Moses and see who he really was? I don't know that Moses really knew who he was. He's had all these identities, right? All these things that he's buried in the past. And who knows what inner turmoil he hears, and he hides his face from God. I think maybe he's afraid for God to see him. Are we afraid of God seeing our true identity? What a silly thing to think hiding your face is going to keep God from seeing who you are. But I think as humans, it's our human nature, right? Don't look. Are we afraid of God seeing our true identity? Will he still love us? Will he still want us? If God really knew? I don't know what was going through Moses' head at this moment, but I imagine he was full of fear. And I imagine he was overwhelmed. But let's get into that. Let's keep going. Verse 7. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. I mentioned how scary it might be for God to really see us, who we really are. But then there's this aspect of God seeing our pain, seeing our suffering, seeing our difficulties and our needs. And that's something that we do want him to see. There's a beauty in that, that God might see those things. For God to see us and hear us and be concerned about us, why wouldn't we want that? In this case, God says this, and he says this after, what, 400 years of slavery. Why did it take 400 years? I have no idea. I have no idea why 400 years God waits before he says this to Moses. But we know that David in the Psalms over and over says, "How long, O Lord? How long must I wait? How long will this go on? How long will my oppression last? How long will you allow those who defile you to live?" Right? How long, O Lord? Sometimes we might feel that way. Sometimes it seems like God doesn't see us, but he does. God sees you. God hears you. God is concerned about you. And God has a plan for you. And that plan is to bring him glory in his timing. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory. For thine is the glory forever and ever and ever and ever. His plan is to bring himself glory through you and in his timing. So how is God going to do that here in this situation? Let's read on. Verse 10. "So now go, I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, 'Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?'" All right, so here we have Egypt, the most powerful nation in the world, right? In Jesus' time, we had the Roman Empire. But here, in this time of Moses, Egypt is the superpower, the most powerful nation in the world, and they have millions of slaves that contribute to that power, millions of slaves that contribute to their wealth. Those slaves are the Israelites, right? And these slaves work for free. And Moses, by the way, was born into that slavery. But he's now a disgraced prince who had to flee, a murderer who had to flee with, you know, because they were trying to kill him. The Egyptians were trying to kill him. And so God says this to Moses, "I want you to go and bring my Israelites out of slavery." "I'm sorry, Lord, you want me to do what now?" Right? And he says, "Who am I? Who am I that I should go?" There's got to be somebody better, really anybody. Anybody, "Lord, do you know who I am? Do you remember, like, the Israelites? I was rejected by them. I was rejected, you know, I was chased out of Egypt by the Egyptians. Who am I that I should go do this thing?" But here's what God does. God answers Moses' question by revealing who he is, who God is, not who Moses is. Let's take a look. Verse 12. "And God said, 'I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain.' Moses said to God, 'Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them?'" So Moses says to God, "Who am I? Who am I that I should go?" And God says, "I will be with you." All right, if I'm Moses, you go, "Okay, Lord, not what I asked," right? He doesn't answer the question. He says, "Who am I? I will be with you." Oh, okay, well then Moses flips the question. Okay, all right, well, instead of "Who am I," then, "Lord, who are you to send me? Who are you? What am I supposed to tell them? Who sent me?" So verse 14, God says to Moses, "I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you." I am. Who are you, Lord? I am. Go on, I'm listening. You are, right? Because that's the start of an answer to us. as humans, that's not an answer. That's the start of an answer. That's like, if there's a pause, it's like, what are you trying to describe yourself? And this, who are you? It might be an easy question, and it might be a very difficult question. For Moses, it was probably, you know, who are you, Moses? Well, it's complicated, right? I'm a Hebrew slave that never really was a slave because I was then adopted into Pharaoh's household. So I'm a prince of Egypt, but I'm not Egyptian. And also I'm a murderer. Maybe he'd keep that one to himself, right? And I'm a refugee. I'm a Midian shepherd, right? What? That's complicated. For us, how would we answer that question? How would you answer that question? Maybe you'd start with your name. I am Brian, right? Name's a good place to start. And then what else? Maybe you'd fill it in with your relationships or your roles. You know, I'm a husband, I'm a father. You know, maybe your job. Maybe you'd fill it in with what you do, maybe one of your hobbies. You know, I'm a gardener. I'm not, by the way. I don't know why I said that. Maybe you'd fill it in with one of those things. Maybe you'd fill it in with some of your passions. Maybe your ethnicity or your gender. This is who I am. Maybe you'd fill it in with a descriptor. I'm loyal. I'm trustworthy. I'm dependable. I'm optimistic. Maybe you'd fill it in with something negative that you think of yourself. I'm a failure. I'm worthless. I'm hurting. I'm in pain. I'm flawed. That might be our answers, but God answers the question by saying, I am who I am. And then he says that I am has sent me. In the following verse, this is what he says. This is my name forever. I am. This is my name forever. The name you shall call me from generation to generation. I am. Such a short phrase. Three letters, two words. I am. But with this phrase, with this name is packed the essence of all of creation. Because this is the God who spoke the world into existence. The sun, the moon, the stars, the earth, and the heavens. All of the galaxies that we've only seen a tiny pictures of. Those blurry pictures of galaxies billions of light years away or whatever, right? God spoke those into existence. And he spoke the plants, the dry ground, the seas into existence. And he filled the seas with his words. He filled them with fish. And he filled the skies with birds. And he spoke animals into existence. And then out of the dust of the ground, he formed Adam. And out of Adam, he formed Eve. The God of all creation, yet he himself was not created. God existed. He always has. And he always will. He has no beginning and no ending. He simply is. And because of that, that's the name that he gives Moses to communicate who he is. Because to add anything to that, I am, would not fully encapsulate. Nothing would be able to fully encapsulate who God is. He is. And this is the one who is sending Moses. This is the one who chose Moses' identity as the man he would use to deliver his people out of bondage, out of slavery. This man, this Moses, God chose him and identified him as that person. He chose Moses' identity. When it comes to your identity, who has the right to fill in the blank? Is it the people that know you the best, maybe? Maybe it's your parents, your siblings, your family, your spouse probably knows you pretty well, right? When it comes to your identity, can they fill it in? Your kids, maybe it's your coworkers, your friends. Who has the right to fill that in? Or is it you? Do you know yourself well enough to fill that in? Or is it the one who made you? The great I am. He's the only one who has the ability to fully define you. Your past doesn't define you. Your present doesn't define you. Your family does not define who you are. Your ethnicity does not define you. Your political views do not define you. Your sin is not who you are. Your gender or sexuality doesn't define you. Your bank account doesn't define you. The size clothes you wear don't define who you are. We live in a society that tells us we can make ourselves anything we want or remake ourselves into anything we want and redefine ourselves. That we can define our destiny. You can be whoever you want to be. But no matter how hard you try to define yourself or redefine yourself, or no matter how hard you try to find your identity in yourself, God knows exactly who you are. And he chooses you. He chooses to love you, and he wants to use you. God chooses us to be his messengers despite our past and despite how we view ourselves. I don't know how Moses viewed himself. He probably tried to put that away and not think about it. Moses was a murderer who fled as a fugitive from Egypt. He couldn't escape God. And God used him. Jonah was sent to Nineveh. But what's he do? He gets on a boat going the other way. But Jonah couldn't escape God. And God still used him. Esther was just a Hebrew girl living in a foreign country that hated Hebrews. Oh, and they kind of treated women more as property, right, than they did people. That's who Esther was. But you know what? God used her. And God used all three of them in very mighty, mighty ways. And what do all three of these people have in common? What do Moses and Esther and Jonah have in common? Absolutely nothing. Nothing except the one who chose them. The one who sent them. Lord, who am I? Moses asks. God, who am I that I should go? Moses, you're asking the wrong question. It has nothing to do with who you are. It's the one who's sending you. I will be with you, and I am. All these people's identity, Moses, Jonah, Esther, they were determined by God, not who they thought they were. We are who he says we are. I am who he says I am. You are who God says you are. And he says you are his. And he says you are his messenger. He says you are his messenger to bring the good news of the gospel of Jesus to the world around you every day in every circumstance. God sees your life. He sees you. You cannot hide from him. He hears you in your good days and in your bad days. He sees your suffering. He sees your failures and your flaws. And God says, you are mine, and I sent you, and I want to use you. He is all-powerful. He is all-knowing. And he is our all-loving God who created us. And he wants us to find our identity in him. He wants us to be messengers of his kingdom, bringing the good news of Jesus to a world who so desperately needs Jesus. But how will they hear if nobody goes? And how will anyone go if they're not sent? God wants you to be his messenger. How are you going to respond to that? This Heart Check series is a reminder that God is the great I am, and it doesn't matter who we are. It matters who he is, and he can and will use you. He's calling us to be his messengers. How will you respond? I'm going to ask Trevor to come up and give us some ways that we can respond to this.